Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Today we are going to be talking about a wonderful, wonderful novel. Summer is just around the corner. I think in some parts of the planet it actually is in existence. Of course, here in the Pacific Northwest, you'd never know it. But the sun has come out today, so we're all a little bit giddy here. But we have a wonderful guest, and we're going to be talking about one of the finest military forces in the world, and that is the Navy SEALs. The book we're going to be discussing is The Delta Solution. It is an international thriller, and I'm telling you, it'll grip you by the mental seat of your pants. And all I can say is make sure you got plenty of iced tea handy so you can sit up, curl up with the book, and just not put it down until it's all read entirely. It really is a wonderful book. My guest is Patrick Robertson. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Donna. Thank you very much.
I was telling you before we went on air that I have a great deal of respect for the Navy SEALs. I just think that they're an outstanding group of people that are just exceptional in so many different ways. And, of course, they have to be because they're an elite force. But before we go into discussing them, I want my audience to know that you have been writing for a lot of years. You were the co-author of the number one New York Times nonfiction bestseller, Lone Survivor. You've done 7 international best-selling suspense thrillers. One of them was Diamond Head. The other one was To the Death, Nimitz Class, and Hunter Killer. You've written other things as well, and you're Irish. You're a man that lives in Ireland part of the time, and then you come here to the United States and spend the warmer months. Is that true in Cape Cod?
That's a very neat wrap-up. That's exactly right.
Now, why do you come over here in the summer months? I think Ireland would be just gorgeous this time of the year.
Yeah, but I got an American wife, and that plots the agenda before I get a word in.
Okay. What is it with you guys? You always have... I have the same problem with my husband. It's all her fault.
Yes, exactly.
Does it come with the marriage package? It's all the spouse's fault?
Oh, yeah, it all comes. Yeah, it's on the plaque.
It's on the plaque. Okay, let's talk about your wonderful book here. It's about piracy, and too frequently we hear about piracy on the high seas. There have been people killed. There have been all kinds of ugly situations. And your story centers around this, and it takes place off of the coast of Somalia. Now, that's sort of making it simple, because your plot is very intricate here, covering so many dimensions of politics and personal feelings and military status, all kinds of things. It's just very gripping. What made you decide that this was a subject matter that you wanted to get into?
This is a bit of a secret, because I'm not sure it shows me in the greatest light, but I will tell you in my usual selfless way. Do you remember that American merchant navy captain who was captured by these pirates, and they got him in a boat about probably 100 feet away from the main ship, which they had captured? He was in the boat. And the Americans got a SEAL team in. They came in by plane at night and dropped into the Indian Ocean from a great height, landed in the water, and was scooped up by the United States Navy and got on board the ship. And they somehow or another persuaded the pirates who had kept the captain for 2 days. And they were asking a fortune for his release. Mm-hmm. And the pirates were asked to negotiate and to stand up and state their demands. And when they stood up, the three of them, and stated their demands, the SEALs shot all three of them with one bullet straight through the head.
Holy Joseph!
Yeah, that was a pretty sharp bit of work. So the captain was released, and somehow or another got involved. He left the Merchant Navy and got involved with a film studio, Hollywood studio, and they decided this would make a wonderful film. Same time, they also decided that I would be the man to write a book to go with it.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
So they approached me out of nowhere and said, would I write this book about what had happened to the captain, write it for him? So they had a lot of money flying around because the film company had paid up. But he wasn't enough of a hero for me. The only person I would have written about in that lot was the SEAL team leader, mm-hmm. who flew out into the middle of the Indian Ocean, jumped out of a plane 10,000 feet above the water, landed in the Indian Ocean, and got up there, led his men, got them out, and shot the pirates.
With one bullet.
But I obviously couldn't do that because, you know, mm-hmm. it's classified and all this. So I didn't think any more about it. And then I began to think it wouldn't half make a damn good novel to get close to a SEAL team and then write the concurrent story, the stuff from the Somali pirate town, which is Haradir, on that long coast of Somalia on the Indian Ocean, running concurrently with a SEAL team who were under orders from the Pentagon to get themselves sharp, to rebase to the bottom of the Red Sea in Djibouti and be ready to attack and smash the whole pirate operation in one diabolical night. Mm-hmm. And that was the plot of the novel, and that's how I got into it.
You know, there's so many questions that people ask about events like this. The resourcefulness, the expertise of the SEAL team, it's renowned. They're renowned. I mean, they go through such hideously grueling exercises. It doesn't make any difference what part of the military you're from. If you qualify, you're in. And the coordination, the preciseness, everything that goes into the making of a SEAL, I think the first 5 minutes, I'd probably say, thank you, excuse me, but I've got to go to the ladies' room. I just really wouldn't be interested. I mean,
you also wouldn't be entirely alone. There'd be about 25 guys who'd got to go to the men's room.
And, I mean, it's incredible. I have to share with you that my husband, many years ago, he was born and raised in Virginia, and he saw a SEAL exercise being done, and it was during the dead of winter. And I don't know if it was in the Chesapeake Bay, but it was in very, very cold, cold, icy waters. And he saw these men being dropped out of a plane, and they were tied hand and foot, just dumped into the water. I think it was New Year's Eve they were doing this. And
they would have come. They would have been from Virginia Beach, which is just south of Norfolk. That's the other SEAL headquarters. There are two. There's the main, the biggest one really is at Coronado in San Diego. That's the home of SEAL Team 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10. And Virginia Beach on the other coast, south of Norfolk, that is the home of SEAL Team 1, 3, 5, 7, and 9.
Incredible. Well, he said it just blew him away. He's watching this activity. There's like dead bodies just being thrown out of the plane, and they had to survive. This was part of the routine. They had to take the trauma of falling this tremendous distance. I don't know what the amount of footage was that they had to come down, but you mentioned 10,000 feet up, so
that's a usually parachute in from that. It's called a halo, which is high altitude, low opening.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
That's okay. That jump is something the SEALs perfect, which is, you know, they jump out from a great height, mm-hmm. and then they free fall a long way, and then they pull the parachute cord, and they float down into the sea. And just before they get to the ocean, they hit the button which unclips the parachute, which blows away, and they drop the last 10 feet. It's amazingly skilled, and they're fantastically good at it, as they're fantastically good at everything.
I mean, it's just incredible what I am aware of, and my level of awareness is nowhere close to yours. How were you able to get to know these people and be aware of some of their training practices? Because a lot of it is very, very much under a security blanket.
It's all very secret. Well, I started doing military books when I wrote the biography of a man called Admiral Sir John Woodward, who commanded the Royal Navy in the battle for the Falkland Islands.
Mm-hmm.
He commanded the British Navy from an aircraft carrier in the South Atlantic, and indeed accepted the surrender of the Argentinians. It was a very bloody war, actually. They lost 7 warships. I mean, it was pretty serious. And I did his biography, and he came up with a scheme and said, why don't you write novels, sort of like Tom Clancy?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, his biography, of course, at the time was number one on the bestseller list in London. And I said, well, I'm not absolutely certain, Sandy, that I know how to write a novel. And he said, judging by my bloody biography, you only know how to write a novel. So right after that, he was a great special forces man, and they were very important in that war. And he said, you know, you should do stuff on the special forces, because I was sort of their overall commander as the forward admiral, and I can tell you all you need to know about them. And I drifted from doing the British special forces to the American ones, and he guided me, helped me, and led a pathway to some pretty senior SEALs. And I ended up doing several novels I must have done 7 or 8 or 9 novels about the SEALs. I'd always checked in with them. I always told them what I was going to do, and I always told them that there would be no chance that I would betray them or do anything that they wouldn't want. And I became really rather trusted. So when Marcus Luttrell ended up in that amazing firefight in the Afghan mountains, and you know about the book Lone Survivor. Do you know about it?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, he was pretty badly hurt and obviously was not going to stay in the Navy for a very long time, and he asked permission to write his story. It was 4 Navy SEALs trapped in Afghanistan, and they found themselves surrounded by 150 Taliban warriors, and were on the side of a mountain, very, very badly compromised. And the battle raged really for the whole afternoon, at the end of which there were 100 Taliban warriors dead. But Marcus's 3 companions were also dead, and he was alone on the mountain while they sent 6 assassins to find him. They knew that one of the 4 Americans was still alive. They had the other 3 bodies. And Marcus was lying on the mountain, kind of packing his wounds with sand to stop it showing up as blood, and he could be seen. And they sent 6 assassins to finish him. And Marcus killed them all, and finally limped his way across the mountain and was rescued by Pashtuns, and finally they got him back to America. And he got permission to write the book. He said, I just want to write a book about my buddies. And it went as far as the White House, and President Bush gave permission. He said, it's about time we had a military hero, an American mm-hmm. military hero, mm-hmm. and you tell the boy to write his book. And the Navy, for the first time, gave permission for a SEAL, Navy SEAL, to write his story. And they provided him with a lawyer to kind of guard his interests.
Mm-hmm.
And then the lawyer said, well, you have to get someone to write it. And the Navy said, the man you want to write it is called Patrick Robinson. He lives in Ireland, but that's who you want to get. And I received this call from absolutely out of the blue, asking if I would write this Navy SEALs book. And I went to Houston the day after to see Marcus, and we hit it off pretty well. And the book came out in 2007 and parked itself on the top of the New York Times bestseller list for 8 months. and actually stayed there for 2 years. It was the biggest selling military book for years and years. And Marcus is, now works on the speaking circuit. But he lived with us. I've got a house on Cape Cod, and he came and practically lived here the whole of that summer. And doing his book, blow by blow, a major book. It was called Lone Survivor. He was the only one. And doing that book got me very, very close to him. And his brother, twin brother, is also a SEAL, and he came here. And I met two or three others at his house in various places. And in the end, I really did know a lot about them. I mean, especially the guys who had been in the Afghan mountains. And since then, I have gone back to writing two or three novels. And, of course, I have a main character who's in this book called Mac Bedford. And he is really loosely based on Marcus. Mm-hmm. I mean, not entirely, because Mac is quite a, you know, a senior officer, but he's a lot of what he does and who he is based on Marcus Luttrell, and that book did stay on the New York Times list for 2 years. It still sells all of the time. I mean, it's become a SEAL classic, and anybody who wants to know anything about them really ought to read that. Then you know a lot about them.
Wow.
And that's how I know about them. So if I want to create a SEAL operation, generally speaking, I know more or less what I'm talking about.
I would say so. That was very obvious by your content in your book. But I want to mention, I want to read verbatim, and this is right at the beginning when you're talking about Commander Mackenzie Bedford. You say, there's no stupid SEAL. 75% of them have college degrees, and they fight and struggle their way through outrageously demanding courses, weaponry, marksmanship, sniper school, navigation, map reading, unarmed combat, mountaineering, parachute jumping, medical courses, because they have to be prepared for battlefield duty. And the one thing that I find so amazing is that each of them as individuals, just like Marcus, the SEAL that you wrote about, they have to be able to stand alone. But as a team, they are unbelievable.
Yes, as a team. Yeah, Marcus, in fact, was the team leader. But he was also the medic and the marksman. They all have to be able to do a lot of things. I mean, if it's of any interest, the most SEAL classes of recruits who are trying to get through their opening training program, which is BUDS, basic underwater demolition, it's called. If they're going to get through that, usually about 164 line up on the first day. And at the end of the 6 or 9 months that really completes it, when they receive their trident, which they wear on their jacket, at the end of that, there's usually about, in Marcus's year, there were only 11 still there.
Amazing.
Everyone else had either quit or left. Don't waste our time. If you are uncertain, go and go now. We don't have time for you.
But the thing is, if you don't make it, you're not put down by anyone.
Oh, God, no, 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 you're not allowed to do that.
No, you don't do that.
It's a hanging offense to laugh at somebody who hasn't made it.
Right, and that is what I really, when I first found out about them a few years ago, when my husband would share different things with me, and I said, this is incredible. And this is something you bring out in the book, their ethics. Their standards of integrity and purpose and clarity and discipline are so high that if someone physically cannot make it for whatever reason, that doesn't mean there's any shame with that at all.
Absolutely not. He may go off and end up commanding a destroyer.
That's right.
He just absolutely cut out for us to be a SEAL.
And I think that is so significant, because the fact that they're even accepted to even try to make it is a big something.
And if they've got through the first 3 months, they're pretty substantial people, but people quit all of the time. I mean, it is that what they put them through is beyond imagination, not our imagination. You know, it's not just the physical side of it, which is an absolute killer, what they make them do. But it's the mental side of it, too, because these men may be, you know, captured or fighting for their lives or something. And I'll tell you one thing that happened to Marcus, if you like. They had a 2 o'clock in the morning inspection where their rooms had to be immaculate and they had to be immaculately well dressed. Pressed trousers, pressed shirts, shiny shoes. Everything had to be immaculate. And while they were having their late night food, they often had something quite late because they have to get up at God knows what time. And a couple of instructors got up into Marcus's room and absolutely trashed it. I mean, they threw everything everywhere. They took everything out of the drawers. They slung everything. They threw washing powder over it. They just did everything. And he came in, and I mean, he was absolutely horrified at what had happened. And immediately he got in there. The instructor came in, absolutely bawled him out, saying, "This room is a disgrace. You are a damn disgrace. Now go and get wet and sandy." Now, that's the worst thing you can, the worst punishment you can level on a seal. So he ran out into the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, ran down in his full uniform in over the sand, down to the edge of the water, followed by the instructor running behind him. And he had to plunge into the Pacific, which is freezing cold, in his best shoes, best trousers, best everything, stay in the water for between 12 and 14 minutes, at which point he's likely to get hypothermia. Bring him, and then he was called out by the instructor. Get wet and sandy means you then roll in the sand, which is just appalling. I mean, you got it in your hair, you've got it all over the place, you're covered in sand, and you stand rigidly to attention. And the instructor said to him, "You look awful, now get back up there and get yourself cleaned up and tidy up your room." And as he ran up the beach, the instructor just slapped him on the shoulder and said, "Don't worry about it, kid. I just need to know how much unfairness you can take."
Amazing.
That's being a SEAL.
Amazing. That's just incredible. And I don't know many people that would not crumble.
Most people would crumble.
Just
but when Marcus was captured, and the Taliban were coming into get him. They tortured him. He was very badly hurt anyway. He had his thigh blown up. He'd been shot twice. And they broke his wrist, and they really knocked him about. And I said to him, "Did you have any feeling of how you were going to get out of this?" He said, "Well, I didn't want to really start a fight because there were 12 more of them outside, and they all had Kalashnikovs. They would have shot me." He said, "So I just had to kind of take it." He said, "But I just thought, you know, I've been through buds at Coronado. I've sucked it up before, and I could suck it up again." I mean, that's what they're like.
Amazing. Now, Patrick, this book is about piracy.
Yes.
You choose to take this into Somalia. The Indian Ocean, obviously, is there, and there is a ship called the Mombasa.
Right.
And you bring out so many different points. It's fascinating as a read because the Somali brigands, these aren't people walking around with a little table knives. They've got rocket-propelled grenades. They've got...
They've got the whole thing.
It's like the gangs in Los Angeles. Excuse me, we're not just carrying 45s here. We've got our M1s, we've got this, we've got that, we've got the other. And I'm reading this and I'm going, holy Moses, these guys are really, really serious, but this is a business.
Oh, yes, this is a business.
This is a big business piracy.
Oh, yes.
And extortion.
Oh, it's huge. I mean,
it's amazing.
When Reuters got in there to look at Haradiya, you know, the news agency, and have a look and try and get some interviews of what was happening. I mean, they were absolutely amazed. I mean, there's reputed to be now almost $100 million in the vault in Haradiya, all paid in ransoms. $100 bills, bags of them coming out of a bank in Nairobi is where they get it. It's where people pay. You pay to get your ship back. But this book, my book, The Delta Solution, runs right into how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not a fluke that they turn up 600 miles offshore at exactly where there's a fully laden oil tanker on its way to Tokyo. I mean, it's not a fluke. They obviously have information that they pay for. It's quite expensive to get a boat to be that fast, that well organized, that much armament. They usually have a couple of heavy machine guns in there, and they're expensive bits of kit. And it's all paid for and it's all financed, and you could just tell there's a couple of Mr. Biggs there, you know, a couple of major businessmen in the middle of this who are organizing. And you can't get a bunch of tribesmen to organize it like that, to know precisely where the ship is going to be, when it's going to be there, that it is full, low on its lines in the water, able to get on board with grappling hooks, the number of the shipping company, the phone number, maybe the number of the people who own the oil, since it's probably going to Tokyo Electric or somebody. I mean, they are well organized. And I don't know if you know this, but on the outskirts of Nairobi, which is the next country down from Somalia, on the outskirts, there is a suburb which is known as Little Somalia, and that's where the pirate money is being fed in. They, you know, just having $100 bills is not all that valuable. You want a few big office blocks, not really office blocks, apartment blocks, and shops and stuff. They speak Somali in this suburb. I mean, it is called Little Somalia, and it is a business. It's what you've just said. It's an absolute business.
And that's one of the many factors you bring out in your book, which I think is so significant. You have so much fact in this story, and it's a challenge that we're having today. You have got people that, because they want their ships back, they'll pay whatever the ransom is. You have this stock market of type that's going on, that's in another part of the world, and I would dare say most people haven't even a conception that this could possibly exist. They think that pirates are going to be sort of like Blackbeard. No, we're living in an entirely different world.
No, they've got so much...
big business.
Oh, gosh, yes. Donna, they have so much money. They can run it like a kind of a corporate operation. You know, usually what happens is a group of eight young fishermen will come in with a rickety old boat. They haven't even got a harbor at Haradea. They have to run it up the sand. And they go into the stock exchange. Haradea has a stock exchange that does this. And they say, we are ready to put our lives on the line if you'll finance submission. And they sort of look at them, check them, and test them, and see that they're up to it. And then they'll pull out $100,000. To set the mission up, the new engine for the boat, maybe a new boat, machine guns, rocket propelled grenades, all the stuff they need, grappling hooks. And they do that by issuing 1,000 shares at $10 each. And they have been phenomenally successful. And the people in the town buy these shares. And usually, when they land on the ship, they say, we're on board. And they do that back on their cell phone. Those shares go up to $25 each because they're going to come back with a huge bag of money, which is shared out, you know, per share. Then they say, we have taken control of the ship and we are in negotiation. Those stocks may go to 40 because right now they're going to get the money because they're saying to the ship owner, if you don't pay us, we will shoot everyone on board the ship and then blow it up and leave. You can please yourself. Now, if you are a part of that $400 million, $200 million worth of cargo and $200 million worth of ship, and you're Lloyd's of London, you are not going to love that. And the pirates cannily never ask for much in comparison. They might ask for $8 million. But the people who have got to pay it or want to pay it are Lloyd's, the insurance company, ship owners, probably Greek, people who own the oil, probably Tokyo Electric, all massively wealthy organizations. And, of course, the agent is going to make $20 or $30 million on the commission. Well, here's somebody saying you can have your ship back for $8 million. And if there's four of you to pay it, which is two each. And if you don't want to do that, we'll blow your ship up and you'll lose the lot. They give you a good business deal equally. They have never gone back on their word. They always release the ship when they say they're going to release it. So if, you know, if you're involved in a big ship like that where the cargo has been kind of has been captured, you might as well pay. You know, it's $8 million.
Patrick, we're going to have to take a break for a minute. Will you stay with me for about another 15 minutes? Because there's things I want to talk to you about your book. Wonderful.
Yep.
We're talking with Patrick and Patrick Robinson. He is the author of The Delta Solution. As I said to you right at the beginning of our interview, this is a book that will grip you by the mental seat of your pants. It is absolutely captivating and very accurate in a lot of information. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment with Patrick Robinson.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. We're talking about this phenomenal group of people, the SEALs, but it's more than just the SEALs. Patrick, in your book, The Delta Solution, you cover so many different layers of involvement. You talk about training, you go in for that. You talk about these Somali pirates at length of business, how they run their stock market. Then you also get into the bureaucracy. And anyone that's ever had any association with bureaucracy, especially government bureaucracy, it's like you need to set off a bomb before you get anybody's attention, it seems like.
Right.
And you bring out subtleties of information of how people who do know how to do things have to be able to circumvent the ignorance of people that haven't got a clue.
Yes, they
about
do.
The real stuff. They, honest to goodness, haven't got a clue. They're living in their little ivory towers and in their little intellectual worlds, and they don't know what these people are about. And to get through to them in what I'd call the black and white of reality just is next to impossible, because they want to make it in Technicolor and with fairy dust, and it doesn't work. You bring this out, and these are people that when they're out and they're putting their lives on the line, it's always amazing to me how there will be those that say, well, this can't be done because on page 47, paragraph 13, this is not allowed.
Oh, yes, they do that. Common sense just doesn't exist.
I mean, it's beyond me.
Oh, yes. I mean, the military, the United States military, are incredibly smart. I They see pretty clearly what has to be done. And they mostly do not expect civilians to understand at least the first time because it's too difficult for them. But, you know, one tends to think when you get far away from the military, like we are at the minute, because we haven't had a great global war that has brought the population close to the military, we tend to forget how clever they are and how skillful and well-organized they are. And when they decide to do something, they are pretty damned effective. And they usually know what to do, and certainly they know what to do with these pirates. And if you'd just left it to the military, they would wipe them out in about a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. But there's all this trouble and circumventing, and then there's people who are saying, you've got to respect the pirates' human rights, and all this breaks out. It's always a bit of a trial.
It is a bit of a trial, and I think that's one of the reasons why Charles Bronson's movies were so popular, because people said, this is the kind of guy we wish we had more of.
But oh, absolutely. We need more like him.
I mean, and I know maybe some people may be listening to me and say, Donna, you're nuttier than a fruitcake, but life is often, in many scenarios, especially when you're dealing with the Somali pirates,
And I mean, and you can't get away from it. They are, whatever they say, they think they're kind of gallant or noble. What they really are is killers.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes, they
I mean, they and they're doing what they're doing for sheer greed.
Mm-hmm.
They make a case that that their fishing industry has been destroyed by the Japanese, who wiped the area clean of fish, and by people dumping waste in that area, which has brought the fishing industry to its knees. And, of course, they have a government which is only in charge of about four streets in the entire country. I mean, the place is the worst place on earth. It's absolutely lawless.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to deal with something like that is probably the way I make them deal with it in the Delta Solution. And I know this is what they're discussing, how to stop this, because it has to be stopped. Kind of this bunch of maniacs affecting the world's trade routes through the Indian Ocean, where so much of our oil and natural gas and everybody else's goes. And you can't have the place completely under the control of these madmen.
One of the points that you bring out is that the oil tankers and these other massive cargo ships are not allowed to have weapons, according to international law. And that just stunned me. They are not able to defend themselves. And I thought, when did that happen? I mean, that is
what happened with Lloyd. It happened with the insurance company, Lloyd's. Some woman sued that her son had been killed in one of these exercises. And he was obviously a pirate. And her case was that, no, he wasn't. He'd obviously thrown his gun into the ocean. He was just trying to get a lift on an oil tanker in the middle of the night. And she took it to the Court of Human Rights in Europe and won. And Lloyd's had a kind of a... I mean, they thought, my God, what we can't be involved in is insuring a kind of a bloodbath on a tanker where the ship's crew is armed, opens fire on the pirates, and next thing you know, there's God knows what happening. And Lloyd's were very, very afraid of those kind of payouts. And they have pretty well said, we will not insure your ship if you are, if you have it with an armed crew. We're not going to insure it. And they're all, there's seething problems. You know, ship owners are saying, well, I have to have my crew armed. I have to go through these waters where we may be attacked. And Lloyd's are saying, well, we're not going to insure you because they are too afraid of, you know, people suing for loss of life and loss of liberty and loss of human rights and whatever else. That's
amazing.
The crux of it. It's the insurance.
Amazing.
It is amazing.
I mean, it just is beyond me, but there's a lot of things that I've seen happen where what I would call an outrageously outrageous lawsuit wins when it shouldn't.
Oh, I know.
It's just appalling to me. But that is being said, here you have these people that are aware of that, and I'm just, throughout your book, it's like, I didn't know this, I didn't know that. All of these different points of information, which I know are true, and I think to myself, piracy on the high seas. It's still there, it's still big time, but there is a way to resolve it. And you bring such a picture of modern-day information, not just about the SEALs, but about the politics, about all these different components that create a crocheted patterning, if you will. It's got all of these open spaces in it, and you go, how come we can't make it tighter? How come we can't make some changes? There are so many different levels involved that, one, actually create the opportunity for the criminal to survive and to do it very nicely, thank you very much. And then there's also the other side. There are so many factors. There are people that want these wars to go on because they're able to sell munitions and all kinds of things. And there's
That's the Yemenis.
Yeah, so you've got that. And then you've got the tribal leaders that are in here that are saying, well, I think we're going to take them over because we want what they've got. We really like the fact that they've got $100 million in their vault. That's very nice, thank you. And you have all of these fascinating aspects, and they're real. This isn't made up.
Oh, yeah, they're real, all right. Yes, they are. They're real.
My goodness. Now, I want to ask you a question, Patrick. This book, The Delta Solution, is so good. It is an international thriller. People can go to your website, patrickrobertson.com, and find out more about you. For those of you listening, patrickrobertson.com. But I wanted to ask you, how long did it take you to do this book?
Oh, about a year.
That's all. My goodness.
It took me about a year, and about 5 months of that was really researching it and getting myself sorted out. And then about, it took me about 5.5 months to write it.
Amazing. Amazing.
It's quite a tough book to write because it's got some, you know, so much stuff in it about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the bit that I was able to do most easily was the part of, about the SEALs, where you can imagine if, in real life, which I tried to make it, the secrecy surrounding the creation of a highly classified SEAL platoon mm-hmm. that was actually geared only to attack the pirates. I mean, the classified nature of that, you know, for your eyes only, would mm-hmm. have been absolutely stupendous, but at least I knew how to do that. And, you know, and I had my SEAL buddies that I was able to check in with. When I did Lone Survivor, Marcus's book, the Navy had a contract that they weren't allowed to look at the manuscript because there was some feeling that that might look like a whitewash. But one of the admirals did call me and said, you should let us look at this, because if there is a mistake, we'll tell you. And we're not mm-hmm. going to be difficult about it, but you should. And I sent it, actually, to three Navy SEALs, two admirals and a captain, and they looked through it. And my proudest possession, they sent me back an email that just said, have read the book. Brilliant. Thank you, Admiral such and such.
Wow.
That's the best thing I've ever had, my biggest moment.
No kidding. Well, for those of you that want to have something that will exercise your mental muscles, as I said more than once during this interview, it'll keep you on the edge of your mental seat. It is something that I think brings you really into a scope of reality, into parts of the world that most of us don't have any clue even exist. But there are these elements in play, and what they do affects us, and it affects, actually, the bottom line, the profit line of businesses around the world, and we as consumers end up having to pay the tab on it in one way or another, because it's always the consumer that pays when you get down to the real crux of it all. Patrick Robertson, it's been an absolute delight having you as a guest, The Delta Solution. Yeah, I can see why it's on the New York Times bestseller list. It's absolutely awesome, and I'm so glad that my friends at the Jane Weissman Agency sent it to me, because it was just absolutely captivating, and boy, did I learn a lot.
Donna, that's very, very kind of you to say all those things.
I wish you the best, and keep me on your mailing list when you're ready to put out another book, because I'd love to have you as a guest again.
Beautiful, and I'll send you that book that you wanted.
Thank you so much, Patrick. PatrickRobinson.com. Check this out. I'm telling you, this is the real stuff, the Delta Solution. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Now, by the way, I know we've got a caller on the line. Caller, thank you for waiting. I'll be with you shortly. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, 888-815-9756 is the telephone number to call in to. My email newsletter has gone out. It's posted up on my website, and I want you to know, I apologize for the delay, but we were having some problems with the server and weren't able to get it out. But anyway, all of that was taken care of yesterday. So it's all up there ready for you to view at DelphiInternational.com. Also, I wanted to let you know, as of the 15th of this month, I will no longer have my 800 number, and if you want to reach me, you can call me directly at 253-582-5604. With cell phones and everything else, hardly anybody else is using the 800 number at this time. They just call me directly anyway on my office line, so I am just deciding that that's something that is going to be phased out. And for those of you in Tacoma, Washington, and Seattle area in the Pacific Northwest, I want you to know I'm going to be speaking at the Tower Memorial Church in Seattle on the 12th of June. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be leading a service there. I will be the keynote speaker, and I'm also going to do some mini consultations after that particular event. So all of the information is in my newsletter. Check it out if you'd like to know more, or call me at my office at 253-582-5604. Let's go to the first caller. Thank you so much for waiting. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, my name is Vicky, and I'm calling from California, Los Angeles.
Hi, Vicky. So glad you're able to call in. Okay.
Thank you.
To say right off the bat, Vicky, that there is an obstacle in front of you, and you're sort of sitting, interestingly enough, on the obstacle. The image that's coming into my head is one of a boulder, and you're looking at this boulder, and you're wondering what you're supposed to do with it. This is the obstacle. You're sitting on the boulder thinking, what do I do with this? It's just driving me nuts. Well, the boulder seems to be in its place all by itself. So you have an option here. You don't really need to move it. That's not a requirement unless that's something you feel you've got to do. But I'd say go around it. Just move on into another direction. Let's say you were in a job situation. Let's use this example, a job situation that you just felt you were suffocating in, and you go, gee whiz, I don't know what to do because this isn't going to change, that isn't going to change, and I'm going to say, hey, maybe it's time to move on. So start job hunting, and I'm using that as an example. don't allow what is the obstacle to be so solidly placed in your thinking and in your life where you don't move away from it. There are times that you don't waste your time with things that are immovable. You move yourself. If conditions are not appropriately going to be changing, and you know that, I don't care whether it's a relationship, it's a job, it can be any number of things. It is up to you to make the choice to go into a different direction. And that is something that you need to keep in the forefront of your mind. What's your question for me today, Vicki?
My question is, I broke up with my boyfriend about a few days ago, and I wanted to know if you felt that we would rekindle for the better, if you felt that, you know, there will be a commitment involved in our relationship.
All right. Could you see in your mind what I was describing about you sitting on a boulder? This is your boulder.
Yeah, but, yeah. It could, that can go for a career, too, because I have, like, a job question.
All right, but that could be. But
yeah,
I want
yeah.
you to really think about the issues that are causing the conflict with the boyfriend. You need to remember that you have to look at it for what it is. And even though the emotions are going to be in turmoil, you must look at the facts. If it is not appropriate, then you're not going to be able to change another person. It doesn't work that way. You need to make the decision about what is right for you, the right direction. I know we don't have time on the air to go into any expressive details, but this is a decision that you've made, and you must be honest with yourself about the facts. No ifs, gee whiz, what ofs, shoulda, woulda, couldas, any of that. None of that counts. What you must look at are the facts.
Okay.
They are not going to change.
But do you see us not?
I don't know that this is going to be that healthy, a relationship. If you wanted a commitment and this person is not ready for a commitment, let me just use that example, move on.
Okay.
It's all right. It's not the end of the world.
Well, do you see it, like, happening? Like, do you see him, like you know, thinking about it and,
well, he may think about it, but I don't feel you're being honest with yourself. I think you are thinking you could do something special to make it better, to make him different, this, that, or the other. No, it's not that way. And it doesn't mean either one of you are bad people. It just means that you don't necessarily belong together, and that is okay. You need to not be afraid of being alone. You're not alone, but you're feeling like you are.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say go out for a good run. And run until you are able to stabilize those emotions. Or go for a walk, whatever it takes. Or go swimming and just swim and swim and swim. Do something physical. A girlfriend of mine used to go and scrub floors. When your emotions are leading and you're not thinking things clearly through the way that they should be, you've got to separate. You've got to be able to look at the facts. It doesn't mean that it's easy, but the truth has to be looked at.
You know how, like, some relationships, you know, you take a break and, you know, we never broke up before. And you know that saying, if you set something free and if it comes back, it's meant to be. So
maybe.
Do you feel that this is like a growing pain, or do you feel like it's, you know, not going to work out?
I think it's a part of life's experience. Hun, I'm running out of time. I'm sorry, but I've got to be off the air in just a few seconds. Believe in yourself. Have faith in yourself. Trust yourself to know the truth. Don't try to make it into something that it is not.
Okay.
I've got to go, my dear. I'm sorry. I'm out of time.
It's okay. Thank you.
You're very welcome, Vicki. I appreciate your calling in. This is Donna Siebel. We are out of time. The sun's shining in the Pacific Northwest. Yahoo! And we can put away our kayaks and our duck feet for a while. And wherever you are, whatever you're doing, I really hope that you just enjoy this weekend coming up. And just know that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Nobody belongs in a positioning of dominating your space but you. Keep that in mind and realize that life is your adventure, but you're the one that has to be able to reach for the experience. God bless. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back with you on Monday talking about the best pharmacist, drug addiction in the medical community. Take care. Be well. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.